Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Thursday here at the Damage Report. I'm John Adarola. We've got a surprise for you, a bit of a throwback, a blast from 2019. Dan Evans returns to the Damage Report. How's it going, Dan?
You don't know your trivia, John. First of all, it's great to be with you as always. But secondly, there was one time where a situation happened and Brett and I were hosting the Damage Report in 2018. So for real Damage Report old heads will know. But no, love being on the show. It's true what they say. You have the best fans on YouTube. It's absolutely true. I always get like wonderful greetings on the internet. And I think that comes from having a good host. But I want to get as many good vibes as possible as we can, because there's a lot of damage to report on.
There is a lot of damage. We have, I think, one block that I would call good news, and one or two will have fun talking about it. But yeah, other than that, it's kind of a damage reporty type block. But yeah, we're gonna get through it together. We woke up this morning and we still had the government that we had the night before. So maybe tomorrow, but for now, these are the people we have. But anyway, as always, we're glad to have you. I actually saw Dan in like the real world recently. It was weird. It was like the before times. It was good to see you.
Wonderful.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, if you are not familiar with Dan, as I'm sure many of you are, Dan produces quite a bit of excellent content in his own right. Would you like to talk about your shows?
Yes, I do Power Report, where I talk about politics. You can find that at youtube.com/danfromtheinternet. And I do a little music podcast called Audio Face, where we review music every single week. You can find that at youtube.com/audiofacepod. And I got all those producing chops from working on the wonderful legendary Damage Report under John Adarola, who I have given enough compliments for today. It's all just going to be just biting commentary and criticism from here on out.
That's damn, you were really doing well there. And then you lost me at the end. I pretty much have to bring Dan on every couple of months because I just need the boost. But anyway, thank you everybody for being here. We're gonna try to give you a boost. We're gonna try to make it fun, even if it's a little bit devastating. And as we go through the next 90 minutes of news, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. If you wanna send us any tweets, comments, super chats, Twitch comments, anything like that, you can do that. And we'll respond as we go. But with that said, we do have a lot to get to, including some Dan requests. So Dan, you ready to talk about some news?
Boy, am I. Good thing the Democrats have a lot to have given us a lot to talk about.
Oh God, yes, they have. The Democrats as well as the media. So let's jump into this. We're now 2 days out from this week's elections. Has the media learned anything at all? Well, let's check in with one of the members of it. Here is Anderson Cooper grilling Pramila Jayapal.
Congresswoman Jayapal, you saw what happened last night. Do you take any blame in this?
Anderson, it's good to see you. Look, I think that the whole issue that we see from voters last night is people do need help from us. And that's what we've been working to do with the president's Build Back Better agenda. It is really transformational. And I think the cries of for help in the midst of an economy that was handed in tatters to the president that we have actually worked to fix since we've come into power in the House, the Senate, and the White House. We cut child poverty in half. We got shots in arms. Right. We got money to small businesses. But obviously, Anderson, this was a 2-year pandemic that the Republican Party did not take seriously, and we're still climbing out of it. I mean, right, there's
no doubt about it. But you're saying people last night were saying that they need help. Doesn't seem like they're asking you, progressive Democrats, for help. It seems like they're asking now Republicans for help, even though you say Republicans botched the vaccine rollout. I mean, Republicans did well last night.
Okay. So he was not going to allow her to like talk about policy or what they could get done. And by the way, I don't agree with Pramila Jayapal on literally everything, but she was pointing out what they've tried to do. He could see him, like his face was like twitching to get, no, it's about you being blamed. And we're gonna talk about you being blamed. Now I will ask this, because we're gonna pull Dan in. I don't generally watch much CNN, so I don't know. I'm gonna genuinely ask, is he saying the same thing to Joe Manchin? Is he saying the same thing to Kyrsten Sinema? Is he talking to, I don't know, McAuliffe? Like, seems like sometimes the candidate's responsible for losing. I honestly don't know, but what do you think about that?
There's this sort of fake objectivity and pushback you get sometimes here or there, but I haven't seen much of it personally. And I wish Pramila Jayapal, and her strategy was really strong, at least a couple, like about a month ago, when she was standing strong with the representing the progressives in Congress, saying, listen, we're not going to do these bills separately. But now it's seeming like she's starting to pull back a little bit, and she's doing the thing that unfortunately progressives have been known to do in when they're elected in office, which is cave, which is sad to see. But I wish rhetorically right there, Pramila Jayapal would have said, listen, the X, Y, and Z things are things we would have been fighting for, progressives would have been fighting for. We wanted like childcare to be like, we want these things to be lasting over years and years. And people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema have been cutting these programs systemically through these negotiations. And we're trying to pass Joe Biden's agenda, Joe Biden's supposed agenda. But honestly, Joe Biden isn't really giving us a lot of help here. So to blame progressives when it's not like the Democrats are supporting progressives as a party is just mistaken political analysis. And that's mostly what I was upset about when seeing a lot of the cable news, which unfortunately a lot of people are still paying a lot of attention to. The analysis was just bad considering what they're being paid to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, some of these are not difficult questions. By the way, I don't like 100% disagree with him saying, like, in his snarky little way, well, it doesn't seem like they want your help. They want the Republicans. Well, first of all, it wasn't a progressive was on the ballot that was on the ballot. Let's be very clear about that. They got Terry McAuliffe. Why is Pramila Jayapal or AOC or Rashida Tlaib responsible for whether they found the appeal of McAuliffe versus Youngkin? Which of those they ended up choosing? However, if his general point is they don't seem like they want Democrats, they want something else, the necessary follow-up question is, so then what changed? I mean, after all, they gave the Democrats the White House, they gave them the Senate in 2018, they gave them the House. So what changed? He hasn't passed his agenda. And he will then speculate about what the people might want. But it's not like we only like have to craft political theory about this. There are polls. We understand the components, many of which you mentioned in the Build Back Better bill, are wildly popular. This is not a matter of speculation. We know that they're popular, but they haven't been passed. He cannot conceptualize that. He cannot figure out why people would be angry when they have things dangled in front of them, but then don't actually get them. He's implying that it was the promise of popular policies that was the problem, not the failure to actually follow through on them.
And like, we do shows every single day, or like we're following these things like weekly, right? Like Anderson Cooper should have been laser focused on the battle that's been happening in Congress and seeing what was going on. And we understand he's going to have this bias towards, you know, being on CNN and being a really mainstream person, not really giving progressives any favors here or there. Mm-hmm. But to angle it even in like I'm just asking questions, I'm just posing an idea way like that, as though, it seems like the way progressives are doing things is not popular. How about the characterization of like the characterization that the Republican Party has been doing over the past several months of the Democratic Party, saying that they're going into schools with critical race theory, and now you have teachers who have their lives threatened because of basically Republican propaganda and conspiracy theories. There's no mention about that. And there's also a point to be said about why didn't the Democrats weaponize this a little bit more? But because anti-Trump stuff works, you could tie this more to Trump and maybe use it to your advantage. I am looking at both sides here, pointing thumbs, not fingers, but ultimately it's a story as old as TYT, and even older than that. The media is so bad at covering these things, and it's a real detriment to its audience.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is bad for a couple of different reasons. And depending on which event or which news event, the different reasons can be more or less applicable. In this case, I do think that, look, these shows are filled with people that are not, they're not there because they're the cleverest individuals. They have the best grasp of historical context or the greatest understanding and daily following of polls and idea of what people actually want. It's also what they're pushing for. And the thing is, like one of the main myths of networks like CNN is that they will be objective. They're not there to tell you what should be done. But he is doing that. He has an objective, and the network at large does. They don't want these bills to pass in the form that they're in. So you bring on Pramila Jayapal and you yell at her for trying rather than grilling Manchin. And I get it, grilling Manchin's kind of pointless because he doesn't care. He's not really representing anyone. But they share an objective with Joe Manchin. They simply do not want these bills to pass. They certainly don't want any bill to pass that would necessitate higher taxes to pay for it. That is a goal that is shared by Joe Manchin, Joe Manchin's donors, Anderson Cooper is an incredibly wealthy person in his own right, and the wealthy people who own networks like CNN. But they will never actually come out and say that, not on their straight news programs. Instead, you have to infer it from who they are willing and ready to apply pressure to and who they will not. They take the person who is standing with Joe Biden, trying to get Joe Biden's agenda passed, and they grill her instead of the people who are actually stopping it from happening. That's how the game works.
Yeah, just a shame.
Now, you want to move on to something potentially even stupider? Well, really fast, I'm just going to mention this just as I saw this headline. I thought it was ridiculous. James Carville, there's a headline. James Carville shreds, quote, stupid wokeness after election losses. Quote, these people need to go to a woke detox center. Thank you for bringing this person on the news. This is what we need to understand what happened this week.
It's just real Bill Maher stuff, like Bill Maher, James Carville, like even Dave Chappelle to some extent. They are speaking to an increasingly shrinking insular audience that likes this. Haha, yeah, I care about, you know, liberal issues. I don't like Republicans, but screw these people telling me what I can and can't say. And that's a bigger issue to people than not being paid enough and going into extreme amounts of debt because of healthcare. And like it's completely out of touch. And it's also not funny. It's just increasingly not funny, which is why I bring up all these same three names together.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's go to another one. I saw that you had responded to this, and I love this here. Okay, the Republicans won in Virginia. Now, they did lose in New Jersey, they lost some other races, but they did win the gubernatorial race in Virginia. And you'll note that for the most part, and there are clearly some exceptions, their whole narrative about the fact that elections don't actually work because the Democrats just steal everything seems to have gone away in this very narrow case for the most part. Now, we can understand that. We can try to figure out what's going on. Others are getting, I think, a little bit ahead of themselves. So I saw this tweet from Brian Stelter. It is quoting from a Zachary Wolf article on CNN that says, here's one thing everybody can be happy about. The election results, for the most part, are not being questioned. That may have a lot to do with the Republicans doing well, but the results should prove to them that Trump's voter fraud myth is in fact a myth. And that is just so lazy and so pathetic. Every bit of that, Dan, is either not going to happen or is glossing over the obvious explanation for what's going on.
It just feels like real Chris Eliza hours all over again. Winners and losers, the real winner tonight was American democracy. This is like, come the hell on. Like we know, and CNN was bearing the brunt of all of this. Brian Stelter had to like roll his eyes and grimace through interview after interview after interview, as did everyone on CNN, who we just spent the previous segment like criticizing pretty heavily here. But this idea that the election, the results in 2020 were manufactured, was used as another like culture war issue to excite Trump voters. And just like any culture war issue that can be used to excite voters, the Republican Party will continue to milk that until it becomes completely culturally unacceptable, and even for a couple decades after that. And so the idea that one single off year election, one in the same year, oh my God, in the same year, not even like 11 months after the Capitol insurrection, that nope, it looks like we're not going to have any of these other ideas about voter fraud being in, like, it's all gone. Republicans are sane again. We've all come back to the table. And guess what? Joe Biden did what he was elected to do, which was, you know, end all the bad stuff and make it so we don't have to think about politics anymore and left-right unity. It's this fantasy world that they are living in that unfortunately we have to live in because other people listen to them from their like tall perches.
Yeah, no, Biden restored the soul of the nation. It's just so like the results should prove to them that Trump's voter fraud myth is in fact a myth. Like that's a fine aspirational thing that has nothing to do with anything. Like, yeah, Ali Alexander's like, well, I guess the steal was stopped. I guess I don't have to do this anymore. Who the hell thinks that? Look at the glossing over. That may have a lot to do with Republicans doing well. Do you think it has something to do with whether they win the elections or not? And by the way, as I alluded to in the intro, it doesn't even have 100% to do with that. Because before Zachary Wolf pressed enter to submit his article, Trump had already gone on a radio show to say that them winning Virginia proved it had been stolen in 2020. You think they can't find a way to turn a win into proof that the elections are stolen? And that's the one that they actually won. They lost narrowly in New Jersey. I'm sure they'll move on. I mean, after all, they've learned so much. Oh, wait, no. Christy Swanson, least of all the Buffies, tweeted, "You all need to be analyzing this speech from last night. Play it in slow-mo. Study the body language as he speaks, the facial expressions, the licking of the lips. It's also over the top and so obvious. Pay close attention, people. He is in steel mode." So that is who will continue to be governor of New Jersey, who just won in a narrow race. I thought they learned, Zachary Wolf and Brian Stelter. No. Because a Democrat won, again, they stole. And how do we know that? Well, they've got a lot of evidence. Just look at his lips. That's all you need to know. I can't wait for the court case to adjudicate how much he licked.
I just have one note for Christy Swanson. Your analysis needs to be better than swiper, no swiping. Because it needs to be better than like pointing out to the TV, that guy looks like the bad guy. Look, he's getting ready to do something evil. Because if a 3-year-old can do it, if my like young like nephew can do it, then it's probably like not like political analysis you can stick with. Just think about that.
Well, she was able to do it apparently at the hospital racked with COVID. She was still able to grind that out. But anyway, look, I don't think that she's necessarily one of the primary thought leaders on the right. But for all we know, she'll be a Republican congresswoman in a year. But we do know that 82% of Fox News viewers, as well as 97% of OAN viewers, believe that Trump's stolen election claims are true. I don't know, maybe integrate that into your claims about the fact that Youngkin won, they're gonna move on and embrace democracy again. Or how about this, a recent poll, this was a public religion research institute. They found that people who most trust far right news, 40% of them say that true American patriots might have to resort to violence in order to save our country. I don't know, maybe those people are not going to rush back into a respect for the Constitution and the rule of law just because Youngkin pulled out a win by a couple percentage points. But what do I know? I don't get paid $600,000 a year to work at CNN.
Any final thoughts? Minimum.
Minimum, yes. Oh my God, when I think about what Saliza probably gets paid. Anyway, okay, let's move on to something arguably even worse. Joe Manchin, I think, in a very real sense, more than almost anyone else in politics, could actually bear some of the blame for what happened in this week's elections, in that Biden and the Democrats made promises of what they would deliver, and they haven't done that. They haven't done that because of a few people. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema effectively are the most out in front. I don't believe that they're the only ones, but Manchin has been one of the most aggressively against all of this. And it's very easy to see how not passing these bills could affect other Democrats. But I want you to see the trick he's going to play. So he had been saying in the run up to the election, we don't want to rush or anything. Then they lose the election. I'm making the case that I think that's probably tied to the fact that they didn't do this. And then take a look at what he says after the election. It's unbelievable to see what went on in Virginia, and not just from the governor's race, but all the way down that ticket, a good bit of change has happened. You can read so much into all of that last night. I think it should be a call to all of us to have to be more attentive to the people back home. And what does he mean? He means don't pass the bill, or at the very least slow it down a bunch, and definitely pass the bipartisan one first. So look at that little magic trick that he just played. He slow rolled all of this, meaning that Democrats would go to the polls without anything to run on. They then lose the election because they didn't do anything. And then he takes the fact that they lost for not doing anything as proof of why they shouldn't do anything in the future. To you, Dan, all I have to say is we are doomed. We are just doomed as a people, as a country, as a party.
Yeah, I do appreciate this laying of the lesson, because like folks who've been watching the damage report, folks who've been keeping up with like politics generally, I think it's pretty now been made into, we're in kind of insular circles on the internet, but it's pretty much been made into a meme of like Joe Manchin just kind of slow rolling things. But it's now we see the ramifications of that. What that means as a result is Joe Manchin is now able to spin the story his way. And because he's saying it, it's getting reprinted in the media, it almost gets like thought of and assumed as like what is actually happening. It gets assumed as reality. And so what needs to happen is that people who are actually engaged, who know this difference, understand this difference, need to continue to put pressure on Joe Manchin in every way possible, not just through like tweets and online interactions, but in figuring out, okay, what does it look like to pressure his donors? What does it look like to pressure him in any other ways? What does it look like to encourage people who are in Congress, not just the people on the left, but people who are silent, who are centrist, to maybe push Joe Manchin a little bit more? Like, there's so many other different angles that we need to kind of figure out here strategically, because Joe Manchin is trying to win a rhetorical war, and he's on the side of the Democratic Party, which is what we're doing with incremental progress is fine, where we can keep the donors relatively happy and like assuaged essentially, while continuing to promise progressives thing just to bring a couple enough to the polls, just so we can stay in power a little while longer. That's very clearly not working for them, because people are not listening to that game anymore, rightfully so. And so it means that Joe Manchin needs to be the most pressured person, politically speaking, in Congress, like in Senate right now, because he can't be allowed to win this game rhetorically that, oh, he's just trying to do everything, but oh, it's just these wild progressive Democrats who are holding things up, or like not listening to the fact that Joe Manchin would say not listening to your constituents is the reason why things are not working, when Joe Manchin's constituents are largely demoralized politically because they realize that Joe Manchin cares about rocks of coal than he does more than the lives of people in West Virginia. Wild, just completely dumb to me.
100%, and that's actually where I wanna turn to now. I mean, we have been saying this for months and months, and we're gonna try to make sure that he doesn't win that rhetorical battle that you were just talking about. Of course, we are largely shouting into the void, but hey, I love voids, why not keep shouting? So he warned, the voters are especially worried about the prospects of major tax increases being included in the reconciliation bill. Even though Biden and the authors of the bill are adamant that the tax hikes won't affect people earning less than $400,000 a year. So he is saying, no, people don't want help, ignore the polls. They don't want the help that they're telling us they want. And they especially don't want it if it means that rich people will have to pay more. Well, again, the polling on the actual components of the bill is the most clear thing in the world. They want every part of it. They want the parental leave, they want the Medicare, they want the dental, all that stuff. But also in particular, the idea that they don't want it because they're worried about billionaires suffering a little bit, that also is very specifically refuted by polling. So we can jump to this. For instance, voters in West Virginia support the American Jobs Plan, including when they're explicitly told it will be paid for by raising taxes on corporations. They also, by the way, support the American Families Plan, including when they're explicitly told it would be paid for by raising taxes on the wealthy. And you can see, like, even Republicans are 43-53. Now, okay, that's not a majority. Maybe we only want to do things that have majority support, but it's kind of a coin flip for Republicans when you tell them, hey, the government's actually going to do something, but you know, the rich are going to have to pay for it. 40% of Republicans are like, yes, no, let's do that. We're suffering. We need help. The Democrats are 88-7 in favor of that. But again, what is the point, I suppose, of doing these fact checks? He doesn't care about how popular the components of the bill are. He doesn't care about the fact that this poll, which is, by the way, from months ago, directly refutes the nonsense that he's still spreading on a daily basis. And why would he? He doesn't need to be responsive to those voters. Why would he care what they want when what they want has no effect on his odds of staying in office. The whole thing is just incredibly frustrating, this entire process of dealing with him.
And you'll notice that most of the voices you'll hear in the media are like the voices of Joe Manchin or the voices of other political analysts who, despite the polls that say the voices of people, just regular people politically, are in favor of these things. Or like you said, John, Republicans could kind of go either way, could kind of be convinced in the regular conversation to be supportive on these things. Shows the fact that, and the other thing is sometimes every once in a while, you will see someone who's billed as, oh, just a regular parent or someone who is a concerned citizen in the media. And then you dig a little deeper and find out they're deeply tied to the Republican Party or Republicans' consultancies in their local areas. The fact that the media is saturated with so many of those voices, and so like you only get like just blips of, oh, hey, this poll actually says that these things progressives have been like crying about all the time, that they're constantly being like verbally castrated over in the media, are actually incredibly popular with American people. That's actually something that people in Congress are fighting against. And there's no one in the media talking about that. I think that's just, it's why we get sort of doomer sometimes, but that's why it's so important that John, you're doing what you're doing and that we're here doing this.
And you as well in your podcast. Yeah, they did CNN that whole election night. They're like, what do the people want? I don't know. There's no, you know, science that's been honed over decades to figure out exactly what people think about policies. We have nothing. We have nothing except our own speculation based on our own personal financial interests.
Well, John, John, they also have like a whole several buildings and several offices worth of producers and researchers. And none of them have access to data for progress. I don't know.
No, I don't think they have the internet. I don't think they're actually connected to internet. Anyway, let's go quickly to this. Let's just roll right into this video, actually.
Mr. President, given what you said, do you take some responsibility? And do you think that Terry McAuliffe would have won if your agenda had passed before Election Day?
Well, I think we should have passed before Election Day. But I'm not sure that I would be able to have changed the number of very conservative folks who turned out in the red districts who were Trump voters. But maybe.
You won the state by 10 points.
No, I know we did, but I was running against Donald Trump. People need a little breathing room. They're overwhelmed. And what happened was, I think we have to just produce results for them to change their standard of living and give them a little more breathing room.
Okay, so that was like a minute apart. We cut out a little bit in the middle, but that was Joe Biden being asked, would it have helped if you had, I don't know, done anything? Would that have helped a Democrat in an office? And he says, well, I don't know, who's to know? And then he points out, and this says so much about what he thinks about politics. Well, you know, we weren't running against Donald Trump this time. Last time I was running against Donald Trump. This time we don't know. Oh, by the way, we need to deliver for people and give them a better standard of living. Oh, I don't know, like maybe by passing bills. So I honestly, Dan, do not know what he thinks the Democrats should do, what they should learn from this. He seems entirely apathetic about his entire agenda and its ability to influence public opinion.
Yeah, he's saying like, I don't know, there's nothing I could do. People need a breather, as though, oh, elections just don't take. The elections just don't take breaks at all. Like that's as though, okay, we have elections in 2021. People are going to be voting. That doesn't mean Joe Biden, as though Joe Biden doesn't have to participate them, as though he can just be hands off because he thinks that his appearance there will make people go, oh no, I'm thinking about politics again. I voted Joe Biden in for president of the United States so that he wouldn't do anything political.
Yeah.
It's circular logic that leads to losing.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, like I occasionally like nuance. I like holding multiple thoughts in my head. It's stupid. It certainly doesn't benefit you in terms of your personal branding or your career growth. I don't think that you shouldn't ever run against the other guy, particularly when the other guy is one of the most reprehensible human beings in our lives. But that said, you can't just do that, and you can't hope that you're always gonna be able to just do that, and you're in a position to not need to. You can actually pass bills. It is just so deeply disheartening coming out of this race, the big signal we have before the midterms next year about what their strategy is going to be, and he doesn't seem to have any actual clear idea of what they should do. So why would we assume that they would learn anything? They're coming out of it just bamboozled, as confused as CNN is about the entire thing, when the answers could not be clearer. Just ask the people. They want help. They put you in office to deliver it. Anyway,
my last thing is just like, I wonder if does the conversation actually go with Joe Biden behind closed doors, with all the leaders in Congress going, well, what if we just did what the progressives want, considering that's what I campaigned on? And everyone just like, they all just do that famous meme of Reagan and everyone in his like cabinet just like laughing over drinks, and they go back to going, okay, but really, this is what donors want us to do, so we're going to continue on that. It feels that way almost, because it's self-sabotage in real time.
Yeah, we're watching it. Okay, unfortunately, I've also sabotaged our runtime. So we're going to have to go to our first break so that Sophie doesn't reach through the screen and kill me. But we will have more news coming up after this. Okay, everybody, a little heads up of some of what's coming on the network soon. Today is Thursday, which means that later on today, assuming that you're a member, you can join Cenk as well as Senator Nina Turner for an all new Power Hour. That is 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific time. They're going to be breaking down the news. If you're not a member yet and you don't get access to it, but you'd like a little taste, they do have excerpts that are published the following Monday in podcast form, so you can get a little taste of what Power Hour is like. You can also watch the Damage Report on Tuesdays when Senator Nina Turner joins us to break down what's going on. Also, as always, Indisputable will be coming up right after our program. And hey, what do you know? Senator Nina Turner is going to be co-hosting it with Dr. Rashad Ritchie. So if you'd like more Nina Turner and you just can't wait, it'll be coming on a little bit later on today. YouTube.com/IndisputableTYT. Today's Thursdays, which also means Reactions with Rivana will be coming up at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Twitch. So lots to look forward to on Twitch throughout the day. Okay, with that, let's jump back into the news. The stimulus checks that were given out through the course of the pandemic, the like couple of times when the government actually pretended it cared about what was happening to us as we were dying in mass numbers, were intended to go to people who were suffering economically. And in fact, they had built in income caps to make sure that people over a certain point weren't getting that money. Now, we can have a very interesting conversation, I think, about means testing for a variety of social programmings, but there was mean testing for these. Or was there really? Because IRS records reveal that apparently 18 billionaires and 250 other people with massive fortunes also were able to get those checks. ProPublica has done some great work on this. We want to give you the details. So the full $1,200 under the CARES Act, for instance, was limited to single taxpayers who'd reported $75,000 a year or less in income on their previous tax return. Slightly more, obviously, if you're in a couple, and the money was sent automatically if you qualified under those thresholds. The wealthy taxpayers who received the stimulus checks got them because they came in under that income threshold. Well, how the hell did they do that? They clearly make more money. Well, they reported way less taxable income than the $75,000 individual cap. Some of them hundreds of millions of dollars less after they used their business write-offs to wipe out their gains. So for instance, 270 taxpayers who collectively disclosed $5.7 billion in income, according to their tax return, all were able to use deductions to wipe out the entirety of those billions of dollars. They had negative income despite being billionaires and growing massively in wealth during that time. As one example, Timothy Headington is an oil mogul. Ooh, those are fun. There's only certain types of people that get to be called moguls. Oil is one of the last remaining ones. But anyway, he executive produced movies like Argo and World War Z, so you can feel about him whatever you want based on those things. But he's worth $1.4 billion. Back in 2018, he had $62 million in income. He wrote off $342 million, which means that he lost supposedly $291 million, making less somehow than you or I. And so he got the check. And by the way, Dan, like I'm gonna let you come in now. It's not that like it's the worst thing ever that they got the checks, but look at how easy to manipulate all of this is for the wealthy. That they can get these little middling things that are intended for you or I, just by playing games with the numbers.
Money time with Dan from the internet. So yeah, like this can seem like a lot of information, but like the way I can put it like this, deductions are meant for like people who have businesses or entities like that to be able to say, hey, sometimes it costs money to be able to have all these things that I buy these things to help my business run. So I can sort of deduct some of those costs at my taxes at the end of the year so I don't just completely sink the business, right? Those are fine mechanisms, but there's oftentimes no cap to those things. And that's how you get this result where people can spend and live lavishly to points at which are far beyond what you need, not just for a basic existence, but for a very comfortable existence. So the idea that, oh, these people need to be spending $68 million in every single year just in order to, you know, get by. So they aren't just thrown out on the street. There's nothing that's expensive yet in order to live in, right? So so you might be wondering, okay, where are they getting so much money that they can write it off and they have negative income? That clearly implies they have income or they have wealth somewhere else. And that gets to the ProPublica piece that has billionaires like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos so upset because it pointed out that because of the phrase income and how we have an income-based tax system, if you just report your income as little as possible and use one of the any number of financial instruments there are out there to hold your money or make your money grow, which are more and more accessible to you as you get even more money, then you can start to play all these little tax games. Like you said, John, you can be extremely rich and still get a random $1,200 from the government because, hey, what the hell? You can get like a nice dinner one day at that kind of level if you're living the $68 million lifestyle. All the while, really fast, people will complain, oh, there's so much government waste, there's so much government spending. And that's true, there really is a lot of government waste. But then people point to like supposed welfare queens or supposed like drug addicts who are like homeless or whatever, instead of pointing at, okay, there are people in suits who already have money who are just getting random amounts of money that are meant to support people who, yeah, you like ostracize and characterize the worst people in society. But like we all agree, there are people who could be doing better with this money. So let's actually think about the problem and not just think about lazy scapegoats to attack people because that's what our political side is doing.
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, I put up a poll just asking as a general rule if people support means testing, because that for me is actually the least important part of this, but it is a part of it. And right now, yes is at 41%, no is at 59%. And this really isn't about this. The absolute amount of money is not much. I mean, look, if they got the full 2,400, well, if there's 18 of them, I'm not great at math or anything, but that's not that much money as a percentage of the overall budget. But it really gets into the point that Dan was making, that we have figured out a way that they can continue to get richer and richer and richer and not have any income. You and I have income because we get a check, we get wages or whatever, and that counts. But nothing else counts, even if it's 1,000 times bigger, 1,000,000 times bigger. And that just can't stand, which is why I think it's a good thing that over the past few years, you've heard more and more about wealth taxes, which can come in many different forms and many different ones have been proposed over the past few years. Notably, they haven't really gone anywhere, but that is gonna have to be a bigger part of the conversation going forward because of reporting like this, as well as you, Dan, mentioned the previous reporting about the taxes for some of the wealthiest people. If we could bring up that chart again, you'll see people like Jeff Bezos and Bloomberg and Elon Musk. They pay nothing on the money they make. We can actually go to later one as well with the little tiny heads. They are benefiting massively from this system, from our labor, from the country, its infrastructure, its stability, all of those things. We all benefit. They're benefiting more and thus they can pay more into it. But they're not. They're paying less than you as a percentage of their income, when obviously they can afford to pay far more and still be galactically wealthy. Any final thoughts, Dan?
No, I think you capped off really well.
Oh, thank you. I like that final thought. That was a great one. Let's add that to the end of everything. Anyway, by the way, there was a component in Build Back Better that was supposed to help deal with this negative income. It would have done so by restricting the ability to use business losses to wipe out other types of income like capital gains and dividends. Instead, business deductions would only offset business income, which seems reasonable to me. I guess, I mean, again, I don't own a coal company or anything, but that seems reasonable. And again, how did that do? The billionaires paid a very tiny amount of money to buy politicians and they wiped out the taxes.
So. No, but you don't understand. So many people were blowing up Joe Manchin's like phone lines. Regular people every day who are like, listen, I want to support you and I want better benefits from Democrats. But what really bothers me, what really grinds my gears is the deductions that I can't take on my business because of my capital gains.
Mm-hmm. See, you're joking, but that is literally what Manchin said in their earlier story. They're sitting in the holler and they don't have dental insurance. So they just don't want people to not be able to report negative income to avoid income taxes. These are serious people, we're told. Anyway. Okay. I'm being very subtly and passive aggressively yelled at in my document. So we are going to move to our break, but we do have a lot more news, including a bit of good news that's going to be coming up after this. Okay, Dan, are you ready for something that seems superficially at a distance like good news?
I'm very down. We take what we can get it.
Okay, let's do it. Let's jump into this. Especially recently, throughout this year, really, America has experienced a number of different strikes. You might not know about all of them because the media doesn't care at all. But there have been a number of ones. Lots of people in a lot of different parts of the country in many different industries trying to fight back against what they see as injustice. Injustice in pay, in working conditions, in a number of different things. And we've got a success here for you. New York City cabbies had been engaged in a hunger strike. And they have announced that it has been successful. They've struck a deal with the largest holder of taxi loans in the city to help rescue thousands of cabbies who have been crushed under paralyzing debt after years of exploitative practices in the industries. As part of the deal that's now been struck, officials agreed to significantly expand a financial relief program that they'd announced earlier this year that many drivers had criticized as insufficient. And in fact, the city could spend $100 million or more to eliminate hundreds of millions of dollars in debt owned by the drivers. And we want to give you some of the reactions to the success of this hunger strike. Mayor Bill de Blasio says taxi workers have worked tirelessly to make New York City the most vibrant city in the world, and we refuse to leave them behind. Look, I'm going to be completely honest. I don't know behind the scenes what, if anything, Bill de Blasio did. I'll assume something, but I don't know. Anyway, he wants you to know that he's on the side of them technically. Anyway, Marvelgate will reduce the amount that each cab driver owes to $170,000 from an average of about $500,000 per driver. That is crazy. The payments will be lowered to $1,122 a month. In return, the city will give the lender a cash payment of $30,000 for each driver and also guarantee every loan. So they're going to be getting more involved in this loan process. Look, to some extent, this is getting technical. I understand that, but different industries have different pressures. This loan situation had obviously been very difficult for the cabbies to deal with. Dan, what do you think about this?
I think it's largely good news. That was the New York Times article was reporting an average of $500,000 per driver, but sometimes these drivers could be underwater for $1 million, and they're competing up against Uber and Lyft at a time when business interests were continually prevailing against taxi drivers. And hopefully not to like jump the gun here, but a lot of the ways that this happened for people following this is that these taxi drivers were promised like this is your way to financial freedom. They were told that like this is better. Having these tokens, which you needed in order to like drive a cab in New York City, would be like a better investment than the stock market. And then you get the token and you get the car and you invest in all the maintenance and there's gas, the car breaks down and it gets hit and there's insurance and all these other different things. And then the costs get really, really high as well.
Yeah.
But like all of that happens. And the fact that the New York City at the time was so involved in letting that happen and letting the prices of those medallions get artificially inflated more or less. So it's good. It's very good that you're also seeing here the city of New York is sort of acknowledging the fault that is happening here, but there's so much more to be done. And it has to be said that these taxi workers, like they fought so hard and they went on this like hunger strike. It's so insane, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, people have been driven to absolute desperation. This isn't even the only hunger strike that we've seen specifically. And we'll give you numbers on overall strikes in a little bit. But you're totally right. This is sort of a stopgap. In some ways, it's very different. But like there's some overlap with student loan debt cancellation. That is, that is in the pursuit of justice, but it doesn't end the system that has produced all of that debt. All of these are trying to help out people who are at the end of the rope effectively, but they have to be combined with changes to the systems that produced these huge amounts of debt as well. That said, I wanted to give you a response from some of those involved in this. Bhairavi Desai of the Taxi Workers Alliance says drivers will no longer be at risk of losing their homes and no longer be held captive to a debt beyond their lifetime, although they will still be a lot in debt. So bear that in mind. The union account for the New York Taxi Workers tweeted out breaking news, two words, we won, plus three words, thank you NYC. I like that. And they said our earliest champions, they credited AOC, saying thank you for bringing light to our darkness and the 2+ years of work behind the scenes, as well as Richie Torres, first as councilman, then as congressman, never gave up on the moral duty to do right by drivers. And AOC eventually tweeted, you're bringing it down to the wire with a hunger strike and standing constantly and consistently with our drivers every day, brought this victory home. So that's great, glad. Politicians can actually deliver. And hopefully, the people who will be economically benefited by that will remember this. They'll probably also remember those who didn't help them when they desperately needed it. Any more thoughts?
No, that's all for me.
Okay, well, very quickly, let's get into our last story of the hour. Let's jump into this video.
I think that some of the Italian vote in New Jersey got a little sick of the attacks on Christopher Columbus. I'm sorry, nobody's talked about that, but I have a lot of friends in Bergen County, and they, they're like, people were killing each other. It was a horrible time, but they really took offense to the attacks on Columbus and Columbus Day. I know it's just a small issue, but I kept hearing that all day long from people.
When
so I just thought I'd throw that out there.
How close it was.
Jesus, our politics, Dan. What do you think, Dan? Do you think it was that? Is that why it was so close?
I definitely think that top of mind is a holiday that comes around once a year that Fox News gets to make segments for two nights a year. For this one population. Again, like in a time where a lot of pundits are getting it wrong, but we're really trying to focus on material conditions and what people really care about, the voting booth, the ballot box. Yeah, it's definitely a tallyphobia, 100%. Mm-hmm. Too much gabagool discourse, not enough of really getting to the issues. Also, Christopher Columbus was Portuguese.
Look, hey, icon for my people, how dare you erase our fake history with your real history. But anyway, yeah, look, I will agree with her to this extent. Italians have had to deal with a lot this year. We recently lost the guy that invented tiramisu. Chris Pratt is gonna be playing Mario. It's just the hits keep on coming to my people, and I have to wonder when it's gonna end. But that said, this is like the most self-serving nonsense from a pundit ever. Like she said, yes. She went door to door and everyone was like, I don't care if I lose my home. Please leave Christopher Columbus alone. That's not what happened. But she really, really, really wants that to be true. She wants absolute nonsense, like a desire to protect the reputation of a guy that's been dead for centuries to be what's driving our politics. I hope that that's not what it is. I don't think that that's what it is, but she really wants that to be what our politics turns on.
Yeah, all of Laura Ingraham's fans are like, it's the dumb cancel culture coming for Dave Chappelle and Christopher Columbus. That's absolutely what it is. And that's why I'm voting Republican. It's like, I actually have a lot of faith in everyday American people. And the average voters are in, like, they're not Sarah Palin. Like, just please, I wish Laura Ingraham would stop insulting their intelligence like this.
I wish the same. And it was a bad time. There was a lot of people killing back then. He committed genocide. Like, why are you, like, you don't have any other heroes? There have been so many people since Christopher Columbus. Some of them have done pretty cool things. I think you can find someone who didn't sell kids into sexual slavery and wipe out an entire population. I'm not Luigi. Sure, I'm not a historian, but yeah, go for Luigi, honestly, before they have like Chris Evans play him or something. Anyway, we do have more news coming. That's it for our first hour. Thank you, everybody. But if you're on Twitch, YouTube, the members app, those sorts of things, we have more coming up right after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.